Hello, and welcome to the Trouble with Customers podcast, where we talk about all things customer-related and what companies are or aren't doing to improve and enhance customer service and customer experience. And while we will just be talking about it, as unfortunately way too many companies are, we hope it will spur you into some positive actions to make your customers' experiences ones they will remember for all the right reasons. I'm Jerry Brown, occasionally masquerading as the customer lifeguard and saving the world from bad customer service. And I'm joined and ably aided and abetted by Reggie James from Digital Clarity, who is the go-to person when customers want to go to market. Well, Reg, good to see you again. Hope you're having a good day today.
I'm very well, Jerry. The sun is shining here in sunny Guildford, so I am well. All is good. Thank you.
It is indeed. Well, today we're going to be talking about the topic for our podcast today is chatbots for customer experience. And we put a question mark there. It seemed like a good idea at the time. And I guess, you know, I don't know about you, but you can't go to a conference, listen to a webinar, or even a podcast without somebody mentioning AI. And at the risk of turning our audience off early, we're going to look at why and where and how AI can be used for customer service and how it can possibly, underline possibly, improve customer experience.
No, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to this, Jerry. I know you and I have spoken about this for quite some time. And yeah. I think generally, yes, we're tripping up over AI all the time. And
we think
as well, a lot of people think this is the silver bullet. This is the panacea, yeah. The answer to everything. But these are early days. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to diving into this. So, yeah.
And I think just for our audience's perspective, I just mentioned, we're not trying to take a broad brush look at AI because there's so many different areas where AI can be used. We're looking at it primarily for how it can be used to improve customer service. And specifically, we're going to be talking about chatbots, and we're going to be talking about really what is the evolution of that where we are today. And I think, you know, we all like to hate chatbots, and we hate being stuck in that loop of, I'm sorry, I didn't get that. I'm sorry, could you say that again? And it's really frustrating. And it's almost like IVRs were when we kept punching numbers, hoping to get out of this customer service fail. So I think one of the things we want to do is as we start to talk about this is really just define our terms, because there are chatbots and then there are intelligent voice agents, or IVAs, the latest acronym, and they're light years apart. So that's what we're going to be looking at. But maybe just to start, have you had any particularly memorable, either good or bad, chatbot experiences lately?
My goodness me. There are some, it's really interesting you saying that. I'm not going to mention any names, but I recently launched an ISA with a company that I was really reading a lot about. And I thought, this is fantastic. Really clever brand marketing and everything else like that. And set something up. Then I decided it wasn't for me. Tried to cancel the account. This is a short while ago. And could not get hold of anyone. And it was a nightmare. So every time I tried to speak to someone, I was thinking there was someone else on the line. It was definitely a chatbot. And then the referral onto a human took absolutely ages. So that's one thing. On the other hand, I've also dealt with chatbots where it came via X, formerly Twitter. And they were chatting to me on that. And then they moved me to a chatbot. And the chatbot was fantastic. And that was a cryptocurrency company based out in, I don't know where they were based, to be honest, but they were fantastic. The bot was brilliant. So I'm thinking it was more a more sophisticated piece of technology.
Yes,
and it was really picking up onto my account. It was going into the different currencies I had. It went into detail on them, which was quite frightening, but it was lightning speed. There wasn't somebody typing or anything like that. It was just immediate. Yeah. And that I was really interested in and really helpful. So I think some people are playing catch up. Yeah. And some people aren't.
Yeah, no question. Well, we'll certainly talk about, you know, why that second experience was better than your first one. But it's interesting what you said in the first one, because one of the key things that most people will say to you about any customer service environment. I just want to talk to a human. Well, of course they do. We all want to talk to humans. We all feel that we'll be able to get our point across that much easier. But I think what's happened, and one of the reasons, I think, going back to 2020 and pandemic days, of course, is that in those times when organizations that either could not have remote workers, were not set up technically or operationally or organizationally to do that, they started to use, well, you know, we're getting all these calls, we don't know what to do, well, let's just throw a chatbot in the middle of it. Of course, that's what a lot of people did. And of course, the ability to get through to a human was almost impossible. So we're definitely not saying, oh, yes, we're going to use these things and replace humans, even though we're hearing all the time that's going to happen. But I think what we're looking at and what we want to talk about today really is about, well, how can we use this effectively in a customer service environment? And, you know, what are the things that we need to look out for and so on? And I think that's kind of, if we can sort of focus on that, I think that will be very useful for everyone that's listening. And I think from a starting point, when we start talking about chatbots, one of the things, I guess, again, we see the, I mentioned evolution earlier on, and what we're really talking about and what this comes under the heading of is conversational AI. In other words, it's where we're using machine learning, you know, those are terms we use quite a lot, and we're using that, in other words, in a very as natural a conversation as possible. And that's why when you mention your second example, you probably hit something or a chatbot, and it was probably an intelligent voice agent. And those terms aren't necessarily interchangeable, by the way, but we'll use it that way for now. But it was one that understood, and it understood intent. And we'll talk about intents, you know, in a moment. But understanding intents, I want to, you know, calling, if this is a voice environment, I want to know the balance of my bank account. Well, you know, that's fairly straightforward, and you know, that's not particularly hard to do. But if you said, I want to know the balance of my bank account, and can you tell me if that debit for £25 to ABC company went through, and if it has gone through, I'd like to stop it, you know, things like that. Now that's multiple, what we call multiple turns. That's a whole lot different from when we're talking to chatbots that are just looking for, effectively looking for a specific phrase or phrases. And if you go away from that, then they're lost. And that's really what we're talking about when we talk about conversational AI.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this kind of, where we are at the moment in this conversational AI piece is very reminiscent of the early days of customer services via the, dare I use the term, telephone, where you would ring up a credit card company and people would be petrified to give any details over the phone, even if it was booking cinema tickets. And they would literally be petrified to give over, very scared to give over their credit card details or their bank details to book those tickets. And I think that that's where we are now. We're in a stage where there's a level of anxiety that's created when you're having this conversation. Like, what kind of experience am I going to have? Am I going to be stuck here for a long time? How can I trust what's been, you know, said on the other line? And though we're far more familiar with it, there's still a level of, you know, rolling the eyes, frustration, anxiety, everything that's created, all those emotions. It's such an emotional experience, even though you're talking to a machine, that the empathy is not always there. And I think that's a bit of a missing link. But as you say, this is it's understanding whether it's a, you know, a bog standard chatbot or an IVA, which is something that's going to be really getting into the weeds of where we want to get to. And let's face it, it's going to be limited. It's not going to answer all our questions. And it's going to be a time when people, I don't know whether, Jerry, whether you have any data at all that talks about, because what a lot of people do is they get onto a chatbot, and given that they have, and if it's a more complex query, and sometimes it doesn't need to be, but you end up, the user end up saying to the chatbot, human, I'd like to speak to a human. And it always picks up on that keyword, or want to speak to an operative or whatever. And I just wonder whether that's a lazy way for people just to try and speak to someone because of the bad experiences they've had historically. Do you find that that's any experience or data behind that at all? Or
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the equivalent of pressing zero on an IVR. So, when
Right, right.
we going, I mean, people still
Absolutely.
using IVRs. It's not that they've gone away, but that's what used to happen. We'd hit an IVR, oh God, here we go. And we're pressing one or we're pressing two, because again, the descriptions that the IVR are giving us are not necessarily what we want. Press one if you want to get your account balance. Press two if you want to, et cetera. And actually, none of those things work. So you end up going, oh, forget it. You press zero, and quite often you press zero, and it says, sorry, this doesn't work. So you're absolutely right. That's exactly what happened. And I think some people are doing that in a way that that may take away from some of the benefits. But I think what we're seeing is where these are used in a multi-channel environment, they're quite good. And it's a good time probably just to kind of talk about some of the differences, because that's one of the main differences in chatbots and intelligent voice agents. Because as an example, if you were talking, and again, we'll use speech for now, although it's not limited to speech, but we'll say you've called in, you want to talk to somebody, and you're answered by an intelligent voice agent. What can happen is that you can have, as an example, and your concern about security is very well made, you can have that linked to WhatsApp. So if you have a WhatsApp account, and the company you're dealing with knows what that is, or your phone number, it doesn't really matter. You can do two-part verification. So in other words, I call in, and it might say, "Well, Reggie," or you call in, "Reggie, just to be sure, I've got your details here. I'm going to send you a four-digit code via your WhatsApp, via your text. Could you please confirm that with me?" You get that. You go, right, okay, this is legit. Yes, I give it back. Thank you, Reggie. You've authenticated yourself. How can I help you today? And at that point, in an ideal world, you might still say, well, I want to speak to a human, but it might give you a little bit more of a good feeling that you're talking to something that's trustworthy. So I think that is an important point.
Indeed.
But when we look at chatbots, when we look at the basic chatbot, the thing that we dial into, or as it's termed, it's chat, because it's usually just chat. And it's really what we call a generalist model. So it's rule-based. If the rules say you've got to say this and you don't say it, well, it's not going to work. It's usually text-only commands. It can be voice, but it's usually text-only commands and responses. It's usually just a chat interface, not omnichannel. It's usually tightly scripted interactions, not conversation. In other words, what we were saying, where you say something and it just doesn't understand what you meant, not you what you're saying, and it's not set up to understand intent, which is, the fundamental a thing about conversational AI, where the intent is, what is it that I want to do? Sounds really obvious, but that's the intent. I've called in because I want to do something with my bank account. I want to book a holiday, whatever it happens to be. And entities are parts of that that make that up. So you might call in and say, yes, I want to book a trip to New York. The entities are, I want to book a trip to New York next week, and I want to fly via Virgin Airlines. The latter parts of the entity. So those are the component parts. There is no way a chatbot is going to understand that. So I think that when you think about that, that's one of the key differences. So when you look at an IVA, it typically has some fairly broad-ranging NLP, natural language processing understanding. So when you say something, it will understand that language. Now, you're right in terms of empathy. It won't necessarily have empathy, but what it can understand and what it can do is it can understand anger. So if you were getting frustrated, the words that you might use or the phrases that you might use, it will pick up on that. And if it might say, it sounds like we need to transfer this to one of my human colleagues. So it has the ability to do that. I'm not pretending it does have empathy the same way humans do. But it does across multiple channels, multiple devices, and so on. So it really does change how that works.
No, absolutely. And I think I think we're moving towards that more and more, given that the web functionality on many of the sites, you give a great example of booking a flight, the various nuances that you have in terms of the time you fly, the seat that you want, all of these different things, and you book that online, where the web properties, the online functionality of what you're doing, fall down is when you need to make some changes or amend some of those bookings, and you just can't because a booking's been made. Then the next piece on that, on the flow, is to ring up or ring up, is to use a chatbot because it's right there on the screen. Oh, I made a mistake. I'm not sitting next to my partner. I want to move further down, or I didn't realize that this was this. Then you move on to the chat, and that's where the challenge starts happening. But I think that what I feel is that the correlation between the chat and what you've just actually booked, the two don't speak to each other. They are kind of poles apart, and you're almost like starting again. Can I have your booking number? Can I have what you, well, I've just been on the, you know, I've just been on the website, for goodness sake. I've still, you know, I'm still there. It's still on the screen, and I'm now using a chat function. Or I'm now using it, then I go to voice, and then it's this, then it's that. So it's that frustration is still there, and there's a gap there. But I think they are getting better. I feel that the empathy is there. The verification piece, I've experienced that myself. I think it was BT who did that when I rang up BT for something or other, and then they immediately automatically say, I am going to send you a text. As soon as you ring them, then they send you a text. And then you verify it, and then you're off, and then you end up either having a chat with somebody or they transfer you to a human. So it really is quite interesting.
And again, it's part of the reason that intelligent voice agents work is that because they're well integrated with data and information from your core system. So whether you're using a CRM of some kind, you know, it could be Salesforce, it could be Microsoft Dynamics, it could be HubSpot, it could be any of these. And if it's integrated with that, as I said, if we did it as we said earlier, where we've verified you, you've now called in. Oh, Reggie, you calling about the booking you made earlier, because it will see that booking. It will automatically be linked to that. So your account information, just as it would with an agent, just as it would, hopefully, and it doesn't always work with real people either, but hopefully that's what will happen. So it means you don't have to do that. You have already authenticated. So it might be, okay, I see that booking now. Did you want to make a change to the booking or something like that? Yes, as a matter of fact, I wanted to change the date. Okay, you are currently scheduled to go up to New York on the 15th of July. What, you know, date would you like? And then, you know, it can do that. So these are the kinds of differences that you get with intelligent voice agents. But again, we're not going to say that this is for everything. And I think it's worth sort of looking at some of the good use cases that you can do. And I always recommend when we talk to people about using any kind of AI, and certainly an intelligent voice agent, really to start small. And that may sound obvious, but many people don't want to do that. You know, so you think about some of the types of things. So you might, you know, inbound calls coming in. And again, we're talking about calls, but it doesn't have to be only. It could be, you know, for one-time passwords. So, you know, this could be one-time passwords and security questions. Could be very basic stuff. You call in, and rather than that person doing that, so rather than the person saying to you, Reggie, what's your account number? What's your date of birth? You know, whatever it happens to be, that can do all of that for you. So it can, A, take a lot of the strain off people asking for that. So it can verify you. And then if the next step might be to send it to an agent, it might be that's all you're trying to do, fine. It still saves a lot of time and energy to be able to do that. So you might be able to do that. Some of the other things that people are using it for that we're seeing is things like, you know, where's my order, Wismo. So again, you called in, you may have to authenticate either with a one-time password or voice biometrics. And then, Reg, how can I help you today? Well, I want to follow up on that order that I just placed. Oh, is that the order for the new washing machine? Yes, that's the one exactly. Okay, well, let me just check on that for you. And again, that's fairly basic stuff that information is probably in the database. You hope it is. You know, with good databases, comes back, says, yes, I see that was picked up by our delivery partner yesterday. You should have that by tomorrow, you know, whatever it happens to be. Yes. So, you know, you're using it for some of those things that take a lot of the strain off of people, which are, you know, really boring things that they have to handle. And that's where a lot of people start with these kinds of things, using that type of application.
Yeah. And I wonder whether that is that's driven by cost for an organization. I think where I'm reading a lot more about this is where companies, you know, there is not a day goes by or even an hour goes by where there isn't a news story where they're talking about the customer experience and the efficiency and the tone. Obviously, the two don't go hand in hand, but they're talking, you know, company organizations are talking about and almost proud of the fact that they're creating efficiencies for their, you know, and therefore adding to the bottom line for their shareholders, that they are moving to an AI driven model. But the reality is that they may also be losing on a longer term gate, you know, and the study's going to be done on this, is that if you're cutting your workforce by a quarter because you're moving everything to AI or moving to a more sort of automated system, what is that going to do to your customer base? Are the customer base going to move on to somewhere else where there's a more human element, or are they going to continue using this because it's far more efficient for the company that it's saving costs, but is it efficient also for the customer? And I think it's got to be centered around the customer always, because the company that doesn't do that, that stays with a bit more of a traditional sort of format, if you like, may actually end up picking up the scraps of the company that's gone very, very automated. And I think that's something that I think time will tell what's going to happen there, because I've been around long enough to see things go full circle, where it's gone from something that was really efficient, new, shiny, this is the way forward, to people actually yearning for some human connection and actually paying extra to talk to a human, or paying extra for that level of service, knowing that there's a person on the other end of the phone, as opposed to something else. Or when you can't do anything online, which a lot of things you can do, I would say the main bulk of stuff online, is just where you need to get the certain nuances of a certain transaction or an order, and you just want to know exactly what's happening with it, that it, you know, or a query that you need clarification on, that's going to change. But yes, it's having that person, having that, where do you draw the line? Where is the blurring of lines between cost efficiency and customer engagement and loyalty? I think that's going to be something that's going to play out.
I think one of the first things I would say to people when we're talking about AI is this: if you're thinking about using AI as a cost reduction method and strategy, then that's the wrong place to start. Now, they may say, oh, no, of course, we still think customers are important, blah, blah, blah. They may not mean it. But basically, I think that's the starting point. So what we're saying to them, what we're looking to do, is we're looking to do something that is going to improve it for both customers and colleagues, because that's really what we're looking at. And if you start with that in mind, so that's why I say start with those small trials, proof of concepts, call them what you want, but those are the kinds of things that you can do, and then you can see how customers respond to that. So you know, at the risk of upsetting people again with yet another survey, you might run a program for a month, you might then send out a survey to people to say, you know, we, and it could be even people that you know used it because you've got the data, so you might, with existing customers, so you might decide to send out a very brief survey. Reggie, I noticed you used our automated attendant, whatever you want to call it, our intelligent voice agent, etc., etc. If it has a name, that's great. We just wanted to get your feedback on it. Were you able to accomplish what you wanted to do? Yes, I was. On a scale of 1 to 10, how did you feel about it? You know, it's a 10. You know, I'm just making these things up as we go. Yeah, but certainly you can get a sense of whether or not that's, you know, is that doing something? And then you might have a question: if you needed to talk to an agent, how easy was it to do that on a scale of 1 to 10? So you might ask 3 or 4 very basic questions that will determine whether or not the people that you've tested this with, you know, what were their feelings about it? Did they like it? You know, they might add any comments. So I think you can do that with the kinds of things I was talking about. So it might be security questions. It might be where's my order and stuff like that. It could be just some really basic information, changing customer contact details. Again, I've dealt with organizations where you go online because you want to change your address, and it says, "Oh, if you want to change your address, give us a call." Well, how crazy is that? I mean, why would you want to waste your agent's time and your customer's time to change an address? Now, I understand in today's security world that is a concern, because obviously some of the things that we've been hearing about, some of the security breaches have happened because someone was able to hack in to an email and then change an address or change a password and stuff like that. So I understand this concern about that. Yeah. But at the same time, again, if you're using some upfront verification and authentication that works, then in that case, I would say fine. So you might say, yeah, okay, what can I do? Yes, I just want to change my address. Great. What's your new address? 23 ABC company. You know, well, okay, thank you very much. Let me just read that back to you. Is that correct? Yes, it is. Thank you very much. And boom, you know, you get that done very, very quickly. So I think again, it's about testing. This is as important as anything in anything you do. And I think this is where some of them, you know, have fallen down. They've thrown a chatbot in. It said, well, you know, how many different questions those work, then you know, it's not going to work. So I think testing is probably the key part of that. And when we talk about the testing, the kinds of things that we're talking about are designing it, what we call conversational design. This is a really important part, but actually it's no different from what you might do with a human. So you'd say, okay, we want to introduce a new level of service. Let's assume that the basic premise is this is going to get better. So you start with the same premise as you would or as you already have. Now, it's going to differ, obviously, to a certain extent, but you might say, what is it we want to do? Well, we want to be able to handle these kinds of inquiries. Right. Okay. So conversational design is really where you bring a team together. And this is really, it's important, bringing a cross-functional team together, because you might need someone from accounting. Well, what kind of questions do you get? Well, we always get questions about VAT, you know, the VAT wasn't added correctly, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's important. You ask your frontline team, what are the things that really drive you crazy? You know, perhaps that we have as dumb policies or procedures, what do we need to change? So when you're doing conversational design, it's really all about taking, you know, the kinds of things that people might ask humans and use that as the basis. It's going to be a little bit different. Yes, it is, but it's still the same. And you develop these conversations that flow naturally. So what you're trying to do is the questions you ask and the responses that you give. We're not pretending to be real people. We're not pretending. I think that changed a few years ago, where, you know, you're not trying to fool people into thinking you're talking to a real person. You're not. But again, as long as you understand it as the caller and the flow is well developed, then that's a key part of it. And there's a lot of effort that goes into that. It's not easy. I'm not pretending that, oh, you just turn this thing on and it works, but you can build it in a way, again, starting with those simple applications and then building it from there. Once you see, A, do customers like this? Yes, they seem to find it useful. And then testing some other applications.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first point that you made there is vitally important. The fact that you just cannot just switch this thing on. You've got to do the testing. You've got to plan that way. If you're using it as a cost cutting exercise, it's going to come and bite you later on. And it's harder to reinstate what you had before once you've sort of gone down that path, because the damage may already be done. So you're absolutely spot on all the points you're making there about, you know, let's test this, let's survey our customers, let's do all these different things and really think this through. Start small, take a sample size and everything else like that, and then sort of start moving things forward. But yeah, it's the interesting thing is that it's AI and the use of chat and the use of technology in many ways is being used as a big sort of as a catch-all, if you like, to try and get efficiencies in place, especially when the markets are a little bit you know, there's a lot of turmoil, let's put it that way, globally, in terms of a lot of marketplaces. And I think that that's one thing, that it's an easy thing to actually dress getting rid of a lot of company, a lot of staff, by implementing AI and dressing up as being efficient. But I think you're absolutely spot on. It's worth reiterating. Let's do the testing. Let's look at this realistically and get a committee on board to actually test all of these different things, as you say, conversational people, get different departments involved, etc. And let's see really where the efficiencies lie, and then sort of try rolling it out and testing it. But yeah, absolutely great things. And I also think that moving forward, we're going to see multiple channels as well. There's not just going to be one linear piece of chatbot or an IVA. You're going to have multiple channels where, if you want to move to a human, that human could be on the other end of a screen, and you're chatting to someone like Bank. I think I was in a CX conference by Engage Business Media, and they had somebody, I think it was from NatWest, who suddenly you're chatting away, and then suddenly they switch to to video mode, and you're in conversation with someone. It's absolutely fascinating. And I think you're going to see more and more of those as we move forward.
And this idea, I talked earlier about the various use cases and use case development, where you start looking at that and you engage with your team. So rather than just going out and saying, right, we're going to go out and buy a chatbot, put it in, and I realize that probably isn't happening. But when you begin to engage the team with anything, especially with technology, and I've been looking at this for years and years, whether it be CRM technology, contact center technology, this, you bring them in early, and firstly, the ideal world is that you assuage any concerns they have. Now, I'm not saying that you can absolutely guarantee there won't be job losses because you bring in an AI, but when you bring it in a an environment where you bring the people together, where you ask them. So, as an example, I mentioned earlier, frontline agents call center people will always have the best idea of the kinds of questions that they keep getting, and what drives them crazy. So that's a really good one to start with. That can we automate that? Yes, we can. So when they start to see that the idea behind this is to take some of the strain off of them, and if the organization is not using average handle time to beat up the agents, in other words, if they're not saying to the agents, oh, you've got to get off the call in 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever it happens to be. And you encourage them to say, look, we want you to deal with those kinds of calls where more complex discussion is required, where potentially it could be a retention situation. Somebody calls in, it gets answered by the IVA. I want to cancel my account. Oh, okay. Well, that's the kind of thing you might immediately want to transfer when you hear that. You
That's
might
great.
immediately want to transfer to a human being. I'm sorry, Mr. Brown, what's the issue? Oh, well, I'm really upset, blah, whatever it happens to be. So now you've got an opportunity to use it to understand what the customer is saying in that particular instance, move it quickly to an agent with all the appropriate information, and then you can start to say, right, okay, I've got a chance to potentially save this customer. So now you're saving revenue rather than losing money. It's not about
Yes.
efficiency, it's about saving money. And I think at the same time, what I'm seeing with many of the AI deployments of these kinds is that they're used to aid help agents. In other words, if you position it in such a way that we're bringing this in because we believe this will help you, it will help you by you don't have to answer the same old questions, you don't have to keep worrying about doing authentication and verification, that type of stuff that a lot of people still do, and it will give you time and opportunity to do some of the things that are much more enjoyable. So I think if you position it that way, you're still going to get some cynics. It's not a perfect world, but the term I use is engage the troops. Don't do this in a dark room.
Yeah, that's a great line. That's a wonderful line. And I think, Jerry, that is a great way. We've covered quite a number of topics, and there's quite a lot in there to soak on. And I think this has been a great first sort of delve into this weird and wonderful world of chatbots, IVAs,
Indeed.
and where this is all going to be going with the use of AI. So it's been absolutely fascinating discussing this with you.
Well, I think as you say, we'll be delighted if any of our listeners would like to know more. We certainly can provide more information. We do a relatively short, but I think concise half-day program on how to deploy, if you like, on how and where to deploy AI. And it covers some of the things that we talk about, but we go into a bit more detail on things like conversational design. We talk about, what does that flow actually look like? Because, you want to sort of understand a little bit about the technology. So there's certainly more to do. And we can certainly have another conversation about this at some point in the future. So again, thanks to our audience for listening to chatbots and customer service. It sounded like a good idea at the time, and perhaps it still is. So we'll find out.
Wonderful. Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Reggie. Thanks again for listening to this latest episode of the Trouble with Customers podcast. Reggie and I will be back very soon with another podcast where we look at the exciting world of customers, colleagues, employees, all of the things that go to make up customer service, and question why it isn't getting any better. And we hope we can make it a little bit better for you anyway. So thanks again. See you soon.